So if they go off, I should say something.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Immigration has and continues to form the basis of the Canadian population. However, there have been some changes in the patterns of immigration over the years, and these changes are altering Canada's cultural composition. Daniel Hebert is an assistant professor in UBC's Department of Geography. He's been studying ethnicity in Canada for the past 8 years, and he joins me in the studio. Hi.
Hello.
Now, immigration is something that most Canadians are well aware of, but are really quite vague about. I guess to start off with, could you give us some idea of how many people might immigrate into Canada each year?
The numbers have varied a lot through history and have been as high as almost a half a million people in some particular given years early in the 20th century. In the 1960s and 1970s, I suppose the period that most people are familiar with, those numbers had declined to something like 75 to 80,000, especially during the early 1980s recession. Since the present government has taken over, they have chosen to raise those numbers and have come up to around about 220,000 in the last couple of years and project a number of about 250,000 for the early 1990s.
Now, I guess regulations are changing all the time about who is admitted and what they need to immigrate into Canada.
Yes, those regulations change all the time. Sometimes the changes are quite minor, other times they're quite major. If I can go back to the 1960s, I guess that was the last time that these numbers were changed in an extremely significant way. Before that period, right through the 20th century, really, immigrants to Canada were chosen on a number of criteria that reflected, in large measure, ethnic origin, skin color, and so forth. And for many, many years, the Canadian government had assigned preferential status to certain countries, Commonwealth countries particularly, and the United States, which brought immigrants to the country which were considered to be like those already living in the country. In the 1960s, this policy was reevaluated, and a set of, I guess we could say, non-racial criteria were put in place for immigration to Canada. Criteria of what sort of education did a person have, what sort of job did they have, and of course there has always been a flow of immigrants to the country on the basis of family connection. So one can bring their brother, sister, mother, father, whatever. That family class category of immigrants has continued to the present and will continue, I'm sure, into the foreseeable future. But in the 1960s, a whole new set of criteria were put in place for independent immigrants, which were meant to be independent of skin color, ethnic origin, and so forth.
Has there been a shift in countries of origin of people coming in now?
Well, the big shift again goes back to the 1960s, and the big shift then was essentially from European people to really a global pattern of immigration. And if we look at the immigration in the last few years, say the 1980s and early 1990s, what we find is that the numbers of immigrants coming into Canada reflect reasonably well the distribution of population in the world. In other words, for example, about 60% of the world's population live in Asian countries, and at the present time about 50% of Canada's immigrants are coming from Asian countries. So it's not that far out of kilter, if you like. Canada's immigration now is received almost proportionally from the global regions of population.
I understand also that there's some sort of point system for immigrants wanting to come to Canada. Could you tell us something about that?
Yes, I spoke before about the different categories of immigration. There are really three major ones. One is refugees, and of course point systems have no application whatsoever with refugees. These are people who need political asylum, and Canada chooses them on a totally separate set of criteria. A second category is family immigrants, and these are chosen, of course, on the basis of family members living in Canada. And again, in that category, for the most part, the point system does not apply. I don't want to get into the very intricate issues. Sometimes it does apply, sometimes it doesn't. But basically, for family immigrants, it does not apply. The third stream of immigrants are those who come on an independent basis, people who simply apply to a visa office to come to Canada. And for those people, a point system does apply.
Now, just recently, actually, in the news, there was something about the family category, that they were going to define dependents as people under 18 years of age, is it? That people can no longer bring in dependents if they're over 18?
There have been some changing attitudes about these three categories I've been talking about. Basically, the refugee category has been increasingly more carefully defined and more carefully regulated. The family category has also become more increasingly defined and regulated, while the independent immigrant category has been emphasized more strongly in recent policies. So we're probably going to see a slight reduction in the proportion of immigrants that are coming through the refugee program, probably a slight reduction in the proportion of immigrants that are coming through the family class program, and a slight increase in the number of immigrants that are coming in the independent category.
Okay, now the government has raised the annual immigrant target to 250,000 by 1992. What sort of effects do you think this is going to have on people already living here in Canada?
Well, most Canadians will feel no effects whatsoever. There will only be a handful of places that will see this flow of immigrants in the first place. Really, we're only looking at a handful of cities, primarily Toronto, Vancouver, Montreal, and a few others, depending upon, say, whether the oil industry picks up. Certainly then Edmonton and Calgary would pick up a lot of immigrants, but generally immigrants only go to places of particularly vibrant, with particularly vibrant economies. So the majority of Canadians don't live in those three or four cities, and they will feel almost no impact whatsoever. However, for people living in Vancouver, Toronto, Montreal, certainly they will see a new kind of population composition. Something like 1 million people will enter Canada from Asia over the next decade, something like 750,000 from Europe, and something like 750,000 from other countries around the world. Clearly that's going to have some significance in the population composition of the three or four largest cities of the country.
Is there any projected saturation point, a point at which Canada will no longer take immigrants into Canada, or will make standards just that much more difficult to deter people from coming in, do you think?
I don't think so. It depends really on the practices of Canadians. Immigration is seen as a way to keep the population of the country growing at a very steady but slow pace. The government has projected, a number of demographers have projected, that the right, in quotation marks, level of population growth for a country such as Canada is about 1% per year. Now, there's no real way of deciding whether 1% is better than 2% or better than 0.5%. That doesn't matter, really. The policy is, apparently, that about 1% per year is right. The Canadian population is not replacing itself to that level. Canadians have moved to smaller families, a lower birth rate, a lower fertility rate, however you want to put it. And the basic point is that Canadians are only adding about 0.5% or 0.75% to their population per year. And immigration is seen as some means to achieve the larger goal of 1% per year growth. And that goal is defined primarily, I suppose, from economic reasons. People want to make sure their pension plans continue to be reasonably well-funded. People want to make sure that their social programs can continue to be well-funded. And people are afraid, really, of a society that's aging.
I understand that you've written an article about all of this for a Canadian Geographer. Is that right?
Yes, it is.
When's that coming out?
Not for a long time. Actually, the journal, The Canadian Geographer, has a major backlog of papers, and it takes probably a year or a year and a half for things to actually be published. So sometime in late 1992, I suspect, or perhaps even early 1993. By the time the article is published, it will be vastly out of date.
All right. Thanks very much.
Okay, you're welcome.
Daniel Hubert is an assistant professor here at the University of British Columbia.